Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, hey! I hope you had a great weekend! It went so fast, didn't it? Wowzers. Things go so much faster when you're procrastinating, especially when it's the weekend and you don't rake your leaves. Just take it from me. I'm sure you didn't procrastinate raking your leaves, but I took one look, felt that there was a strong breeze, and decided, nah, they can wait. I'll just wait till every single last leaf falls from the trees, and then I will rake. Except you know what else happened this weekend? First snowflakes in my neighborhood. I looked up thinking it was maybe some dirt or some debris blowing. I wasn't sure what was happening. And then I realized, OMG, those are the first snowflakes of the year. Now, they did not stick, so they didn't actually bury the leaves, so I'm still on the hook for raking. Anyway, I'm sure you were much more on top of things over the weekend than I was. I just know it went so fast. And here we are back in the studio. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Inside the Quicken Loans studios, national mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I had an absolute blast on Sunday using the hashtag salute to service every single time almost that I tweeted about football. You may wonder why, but we still have time because on Sunday, and it is still Sunday in half of the United States time zones, right? Still Sunday in the Pacific time zone, in the Alaskan and Hawaiian time zones. And if I need to make my case, I can certainly do it. We cost the NFL a ton of money today. Because on Veterans Day, every time the hashtag salute to service was either tweeted or retweeted, it wasn't just $5 going to the NFL's military partners, and I mean the nonprofits that benefit active service members, their families, and veteran services. Every single time the hashtag was used, it was $25 donated. And the last time the NFL posted an update, it was close to $6 million raised. How great is that? Now, it's going on throughout the month, except that only on Veterans Day did the NFL up the ante so that it was $25 per tweet. So I would encourage you in the next couple hours to go to my Twitter and retweet all of my hashtags, retweet all of my football stuff so that we can continue to make the NFL pay. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So anyway, find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. This is not about me. This is about the NFL and our incredible veterans. And before I get started talking about football, I did as much thanking people as I could in person and over text and over social media on Sunday. But for those of you who are veterans who are listening to the show, and I know that we have many, if you served in any branch of our nation's military or you supported a family member who served, maybe you lost a family member who served, you have my sincerest gratitude today and every day. It's not just on Veterans Day that I think of you and that I appreciate you. Your sacrifices to protect our freedom are not forgotten. You are not forgotten. So I hope that you know that comes from the bottom of my heart. It's not just something cute to put on social media. Like you, I have family members who served, including a great uncle who also celebrated a birthday. So he was born on Veterans Day and he served. My grandfather on my dad's side who served. Also, many friends, and just I know on this day that it's a somber occasion for many families because some of you are missing your veterans who served. So I hope it helps that we hold you in our great debt here in the United States. So if you go to my Twitter, use any of the tweets that have the hashtag salute to service, retweet, retweet. It's too hard to say over and over again. Anyway, just go ahead and find all those hashtags or tweet your own so that we can force the NFL to fork it over. All right, it's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our phone number. You can find me on Twitter or on Facebook. There's going to be a lot of football conversation, which is awesome. So we'll launch into our big week here with tons of news that happened even before we got to the games that kicked off on Sunday. I will say this with all sincerity, and for those of you who listened to my show last week, you should know that I'm being genuine. I was so disappointed when I heard about Dez Bryant. I mean, I was dejected for a while. I didn't know about it until way after the fact because I was traveling with the Columbia women's basketball team on Friday and I was doing a basketball game, their first of the season. I just wasn't paying any attention to what was happening outside of that little basketball bubble. And so when I got a couple of texts to tell me that Dez had torn his Achilles, one family member said it even happened on the last play of practice, which is just awful. I felt so bad because not only was I sure that he was going to use the second chance to really make a difference, but this could potentially be a career-ending injury. I hope it's not. I hope this blown Achilles heals perfectly and Dez can come back. But at this later stage in his career, this could potentially be the end for Dez Bryant. And I was really disappointed for him, but also disappointed for the Saints, because they thought they had added the perfect complement to Michael Thomas and Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. A lot of the Saints on Sunday were throwing up the X in what was a blowout victory at Cincinnati. Think about that. He went through two practices, and they're already throwing up the X. I mean, that's how much of an impact he made in just a couple of practices with them. So that's one big piece of news. And then how about this one? Multiple reports indicating that Le'Veon Bell is not going to report by Tuesday's deadline. Now, you know, we spent hours on this topic last week, just mulling over the different options and talking about what the Steelers should do if he reports. It may be a moot point because he may not report. And again, what did I tell you last week? Why would he report now? He's already forfeited 2/3 of the money, and if he comes back in platoons with James Conner, isn't that proving to the rest of the league that you don't deserve a contract that pays you like a quarterback? If you're platooning with another running back on your own team, why would anyone want to pay you quarterback money? So it was a bad decision from the beginning, and it's only gotten worse, in my opinion. Great for the Steelers, bad for Le'Veon Bell, and I just can't believe that he's going to sit out an entire season. I don't think this makes him more desirable, especially when we've heard the trade market is pretty lukewarm for him, or it was before we got to the deadline. Couple of basketball notes, too, that we may get to. We'll sprinkle them in throughout the show. But Jimmy Butler, of course, that trade should be finalized early this week to Philadelphia. They tried to work it out. It did not work out. It became apparent over this last road trip for the Timberwolves that this was an untenable situation. And how about what's brewing in Houston? Carmelo Anthony not with the team. They speak highly of him, and it's not as though they're blaming him for their awful start, only that they want to work in some players who are free agents, who are young, who are not paid very much at all, just to see if they can start to spark that team to a few wins. And they need the roster spot. And also, what's the point of keeping him around when you're going to start taking his minutes for somebody else? So those are kind of the big news items. Oh, and .. The Ravens could soon be moving on from both John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco. We'll try to get to the bottom of that as well this week. But a lot happening on the field, not just in the news on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. As always, we start with Sunday Night Football, and we work our way backwards. And this was a doozy from the NFC East. Maybe you thought after watching the first 9 drives result in 9 points that this was going to be a defensive slugfest. And you wouldn't have been surprised, right? Because it's Dallas and it's Philly, and this is what they do. It's an NFC East grinder in which they're both attempting to keep up with the Redskins, who had won earlier in the day. So the Dallas defense was dominant, that front in stuffing the run and putting pressure on Carson Wentz. And then, almost in a nutshell, at least the first half, you had the drive in which Dallas converts the fake punt on 4th and 2. Remember that? Jeff Heath, he takes the quick snap and he's able to get that first down. And then the fantastic moment where Ezekiel Elliott high hurdles over Trey Sullivan. Holy cow, did he get some air? But, you know, he used to be a track star as well. So he high hurdles over Trey Sullivan, but then trips and falls short of the goal line. I mean, isn't that just life for the Dallas Cowboys this year? It's one incredible play, one incredible moment, something that belongs on the highlight reel, and then boom, trip and fall flat on your face. I mean, to me, that was a microcosm for the entire Cowboys season. Now, the season is not over. I've told you before, they cannot make a coaching change because they're still in the running for not just the NFC East title, but also for a wild card. So, they end up not making anything of that whole fake punt conversion on 4th and 2. But just before halftime, it was like the Cowboys giveth and the Cowboys taketh away. And the Cowboys giveth. And you just hope that they can capture some of that giving in a bottle. And they do. They get the ball back with 93 seconds left in the first half. 8 plays, 75 yards. And you've got Dak showing off his arm. You've got the accuracy. You've got the efficiency. If you're a Cowboys fan, weren't you wondering, why can't they do that every single drive? Except that's just not how it goes. It's wildly inconsistent, and it is for both the Cowboys and for the Eagles. Again, the entire season's been like that. So Dak and Zeke. Oh, it's like a celebrity marriage. Deke. Perfect. So Dak and Zeke and the Cowboys are up 13-3 at the break. And then midway through the third quarter, everything changes. The whole game completely changes. They go 4 consecutive touchdown drives between the Cowboys and the Eagles. And that's not quite the floodgates, but it was enough to make this game really entertaining. So you've got the Ezekiel Elliott touchdown with about 3 minutes to go that put the Cowboys ahead. And then it was up to the Dallas defense. Now, Eagles get the ball back. They turn it over on down. So they came very close to converting. Zach Ertz was a monster in this game, but they don't do it. That's their second to last drive. And then they force a 3-and-out. They get the ball again. So one more time, the Dallas defense has to hold.
2nd and 1 at the 32. Wentz gets the shotgun snap. Pressure comes. Steps away. Wentz throwing over the middle. It is caught by Ertz inside the 10. Ball lateral now to Golden Tate. And Tate trying to fight for extra yardage. Clock has hit zeros. Tate is stopped at the 9. Dallas wins it on the road. 27-20.
It was back and forth. Obviously, that's a good team we played out there to finish Super Bowl champions in their home stadium. Great atmosphere. We scored, they responded. We scored, they responded. Defense went out there and was able to stop them when we needed to get this win.
Dak ends up going 26 of 36 for 270 yards and 2 touchdowns. Elliott, 151 yards rushing, another 36 yards through the air. He had a couple of scores. How about this? First road win for Dallas of the season. They get their first road win. They're still 2 games back of the Washington Redskins, who again won. Oh my gosh, talk about ugly game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll get to that. It was a total defensive dominant performance, though, for the Redskins. And so the Cowboys look like they're going to grind it out, use their defense, but they get enough offense, and it was really entertaining in the second half. So maybe, just maybe, does this quiet those people who are calling for Jason Garrett's head? It felt like it was personal for these Cowboys. Like, they wanted to silence the doubters for at least 1 week. And Jason Garrett, while he was conservative at times, it played right into the game plan. They needed him to be conservative. So it worked well, and Dak made him look smart.
I just thought he played really well. And, you know, we talked about the importance of mental toughness, and there's going to be some good things. Keep playing. There's going to be some adversity. Keep playing. And I thought he was the best or as good an example of that on our team. It wasn't always smooth. We were digging out it a couple different times, but he made great decisions. I thought he played tough. I thought he made a lot of really good throws and made a lot of big plays at the critical moments in the game.
As for the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs, they did find a rhythm at some point there in the second half, but they just couldn't capitalize enough on their opportunities. It certainly doesn't help that your top running back is Josh Adams. All right, quick. What do you know about Josh Adams? Exactly. That's not quick. Not much. Their run game has been very spotty this year. Zach Ertz has been amazing. 145 yards for him, 2 touchdowns. He is as close as the NFL's got to unguardable. He's phenomenal. But too many drives that came up empty. And for Carson Wentz, they had to throw the ball a lot more, of course, when they got behind. But they weren't behind by so much. They couldn't come up with the big plays when they needed to. The ones that would make a statement, that would give them confidence on the sidelines. And so Carson goes 32 of 44. He has a couple of touchdowns, though he does have an interception. Dallas did a great job of putting pressure on him. And one more time for Doug Peterson. How much have we heard this season? It's all about figuring a way to break through and to execute the game plan.
Each week, it's a strain. I mean, you have to strain yourself to make plays. I mean, that's just the way this game is. And we didn't do enough of that today. And that's the disappointing thing. You know, and just gave up too many plays defensively, and then offense didn't execute, enough. And so that's the disappointing thing. But each person, each coach, each player in that locker room, we have to really look at yourself and decide every day you come to work that you're going to give your best.
The Redskins have the 6-3 record atop the NFC East. Cowboys and Eagles are now both 4-5. In other words, nobody else is above 500 in that division. Good for the Redskins, but man, they are inconsistent as well. The entire division is a crapshoot from week to week. I want you to want to win the NFC East. Go get it. Can somebody freaking go get it? So that was Sunday Night Football between the Cowboys and the Eagles. And like I said, you got to get off Jason Garrett's back at least for 1 week. But here's my question tonight. There are some teams in the midst of just brutal seasons, and you know there are changes coming. We've already had one coach relieved of his duties. That's Hugh Jackson in Cleveland. Greg Williams is now 1-1. Which coach or coaching staff do you think should be the next to go? Whether it's now or whether it's closer to the end of the season, maybe they wait until after the season. But where do you think a coaching change is desperately needed? And please be practical. Don't tell me that, don't tell me that Mike Tomlin needs to be fired in Pittsburgh. Knock it off.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
A magnificent offensive day for the New Orleans Saints. Holy cow. At Cincinnati. 509 total yards, 33 first downs. 33 first downs, are you kidding me? And then 244 yards rushing. Between Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram and Michael Thomas, they almost could make you forget about the failed Dez Bryant experiment, except that a bunch of the guys kept throwing up the X. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Drew Brees, 22 of 25 for 265 yards. And he had 4 total touchdowns. His last one was, you know, this slight little man. Little compared to football, the rest of football players. Slight little man, about what, 6 foot? Maybe 6 foot in cleats. And he's also 39. And he hurls himself up and over a pile of man flesh into the end zone. It was pretty impressive. Everything that Drew Brees did on Sunday was really impressive. But he had a lot of help. Because Ingram had 158 yards and a touchdown. Alvin Kamara had 2 touchdowns. This was absolutely a masterpiece for the offense.
I think so far this is our most complete game from start to finish. Just both sides of the ball, you know, really executing well and taking advantage of opportunities.
We had the balance that we were looking for. I felt like the run and the pass complemented each other, and I also thought it complemented what we were doing defensively. Our third down numbers on defense were great. We were able to get off the field. So, look, it was all in all a pretty solid game.
Sean Payton points to their defense on third down. Do you know that the Bengals were 0 for 6 on third down? I mean, they only had six opportunities. That in and of itself is noteworthy, but they were 0 for 6 on third down. They were dominated in the time of possession category. They had no A.J. Green, but that's not the reason why Andy Dalton threw two interceptions and got sacked four times. This was as lopsided an affair as you can find. Kind of like the Jets and the Bills on Sunday. We'll get to that game. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and producer Chris has been instructed to retweet all of your tweets with salute to service so we can make the NFL fork over even more money. So keep it going. I love the fact that you're so active on Twitter right now. So again, me, A-Law Radio, and it's all about making the NFL pay $25 and donate $25 for every tweet that has the hashtag salute to service. The retweets count as well. They all go to organizations like the Wounded Warrior Project or like the Pat Tillman Foundation that are nonprofits supporting veterans, military service members, and their families. So that's the most important thing that we're doing tonight. And I'm excited about that because you're all on board. Let's quick do a run through the standings. Then we'll take our break and we're going to head to Philadelphia after the update and check in on the Super Bowl champion Eagles, who are below 500 through week number 10. In the NFC, pretty impressive what the Saints and the Rams have done. So New Orleans, after losing its season opener to Tampa Bay and Fitzmagic, have now won 8 consecutive games. They are the hottest team in football. The Rams rebound from that loss to the Saints last week, and they're now at 9-1 after edging the Seahawks. Do you know the Rams can clinch the NFC West next week? That's how far ahead they are in that division because there's no other team that's above 500. The Bears, with their 3-game win streak, stay ahead of their contenders in the NFC North. The Vikings are off this week, and so they're not playing, but still they're a game back. And then looking at the NFC East, we did already. Redskins there are at 6-3. In the AFC, we'll talk about the Patriots and what was an embarrassing loss for them at the Titans and Mike Vrabel. But the Dolphins are still 2 games back because they lost to Green Bay on Sunday. So Patriots at 7-3 may not be the front runner for a bye right now or the number one seed, but they still should. They do control their own fate in the AFC East. They should still be able to take care of business in their division. Pittsburgh, we talked about 6-2-1. The Bengals lost on Sunday, so they fall to 5-4. In the AFC South, you've got that 6-game winning streak for the Texans. But the Titans, with that victory over the Patriots, pull within a game of Houston in the South Division. And then the Chiefs, they win again. It was I don't want to say ugly win because there's still a lot of offense, but it was not as beautiful as it normally is for the Chiefs. It was a grind. That's a good word to describe how they had to play against that Arizona defense. It was a grind. So the Chiefs are at 9-1, but how about the Chargers? They might be the most overlooked good team in the NFL this year. Do you know they have the same number of wins as the Patriots? The Chargers are now 7-2. Now, I told you in my column that I wrote last week that they're in an 8-game stretch where only one of the teams they're playing has a record above 500. But you know what? There's no college football playoff committee for the NFL. So it doesn't matter what your strength of schedule is. It's all about your record. And right now the Chargers are 7-2 and they've won 6 consecutive games. So like it or not, not only can the Chiefs not seem to get them off their rear ends, but they're right there in the running for a bye as well, which is really impressive.
That's nerd stuff.
Seriously, that's what I thought. I mean, don't look now, but the Chargers may spoil your fun in the AFC. All right, so we've got the standings that we'll continue to pick apart as we go through these different games and how Week 10 affected what we know about this very foggy playoff picture, but it's kind of fun to see it take a shape from week to week now as we get close to Thanksgiving. Straight ahead, we're going to check in on the Philadelphia Eagles. How do they find more consistency? And what happens if they finish this season below 500 after winning a Super Bowl? They got booed off the field at halftime.
months after winning a Super Bowl. All right, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Find me on Twitter. Retweet. Hashtag salute to service. A-Law Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We're pleased to spend some time in Philadelphia now and welcome Dave Zangaro, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philly. Dave, thanks so much for a couple minutes. Let's start with this. What happened to the Eagles' run defense tonight?
Yeah, it's hard to figure out. I mean, the Eagles coming into this game had the second-best run defense in the league, giving up 83 yards a game, and they got torched tonight. 171 yards on the ground. Zeke has 151 of them. I was just crunching the numbers a little bit. It's the most yards they've given up to any running back in a game under Jim Schwartz. So we're talking before the 2016 season. This is kind of their bread and butter. That's what they really pride themselves on, is stopping the run. And it was just a few really big ones tonight. Obviously, the hurdle was a big play. That was a 32-yard run. He had another 15-yard run, a 25, I think, in there. So it was just a few of those big runs. They lost contain on a few of them. A few of them, they just had a chance to tackle him. They didn't do it. And against a guy like Zeke Elliott, if you don't tackle him when you get your chances, I mean, he's going to make you pay. So, it was bad. I mean, it's not the only thing that went wrong for them tonight. I think there's a laundry list of problems that showed up in that game for the Eagles, but not stopping the run has to be up there.
Well, we've heard the same refrain from Doug Peterson over and over and over again. We've got to do better. We all have to look in the mirror. We all need to be worried about our jobs. And he goes on. And yet still, they cannot find any type of rhythm. They can't find consistency. And it seems like when the opportunities are there, they do not take advantage of them. Why? What is so different about this season than last season, when it seemed like they were a team that was professional and focused and disciplined and they would take care of business?
Yeah, it's been really hard to figure out. And, you know, after every one of these losses, we kind of do the autopsy. You try to figure out what went wrong. And it's hard to really pinpoint a lot of it. You look at – and it's always, you know, in the week after the games, it's kind of been a blame game, not among the team, but of fans and radio people. And who's to blame? Is it the offense? Is it the defense? Is it play calling? But to me, it's just really the whole team. It's sure, the offense deserves a lot of blame. They're not scoring enough points. That Carson Wentz turnover can't happen early in the games. They're getting off to slow starts. But the defense, I mean, you look at the Eagles, they have two drives to tie the game in the second half. And on the ensuing drive, the defense gives up 75-yard touchdown drives. So I think there's a whole bunch of blame to go around. But it doesn't really change the idea that, why is this team so bad? Why are they not at least somewhat like they were last year? They have so much of the same players back. But it's hard to figure, because chemistry is something that doesn't show up on paper. Because when you look at this team on paper, they should be good, right? I mean, there's no reason for them to struggle the way they have. They have Carson Wentz, who until tonight had been playing at an extremely high level. And they're still losing these games. It's troublesome. In the locker room after the game tonight was the first time. Normally after these games, a lot of the players have been kind of angry. And I didn't sense anger tonight. I kind of sensed like, we got to figure this out really quickly, because the season is slipping away from us.
Dave Zangaro is an Eagles reporter for NBC Sports Philadelphia with us here After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Since you were attending the game, you, I'm sure, heard the boos at halftime. They got booed royally. But it's also their third consecutive loss at home. On top of everything else going on, that's got to be demoralizing, that they can't seem to protect their own field.
Yeah, and before these three games, they were under Doug Peterson, they were the best home team in football. So it's another troubling thing, that it's hard to figure out why they can't play at home. And those boos were, I thought, pretty deserving tonight, to be honest with you. When a team has that much talent, when the expectations are so high, and when they play that poorly like they did at the beginning of that game, especially offensively. They deserve to be booed, frankly. I mean, that's how badly they've played. And, you know, it's not the Super Bowl season anymore.
Right.
And I mean that from a lot of different aspects. I mean that from the fans aren't happy to look up at the banner and remember last year. And the players, they have to remember they're not the Super Bowl team either, because they're certainly not playing like it. They got to figure out what works this year, and they haven't been able to do that so far.
Which injuries do you think have taken the greatest toll on the team?
Well, overall, in the first nine games, I'd say to the offensive line, they have both tackles really banged up. Lane Johnson didn't play tonight. Jason Peters has been dealing with his own injuries. But especially tonight, the secondary, I mean, they had guys out there who weren't on the opening day roster playing significant snaps. They came into this game without Jalen Mills, without Sidney Jones, two of their three starting corners. And then they lose Ronald Darby in the third quarter. They're already without Rodney McLeod, starting safety for the season after he tore his ACL. So of their five starters in their secondary to start the season, they were down to just Malcolm Jenkins tonight. So that's bad enough against Dak Prescott. I can't imagine what's going to happen next week in New Orleans against Drew Brees.
Oh, gosh. No doubt. Considering the fact that the game is on the road in New Orleans, though, maybe it's better that they get out of Philadelphia. But, man alive, that's tough. How do you think Golden Tate is fitting in so far?
I didn't see enough. You know, they got him on a bye week, so they had a little bit more time than if they had played last weekend. I just didn't see enough from him. You know, they traded away a third-round pick to bring this guy in, and I didn't think he had a big enough role in the offense. I thought that he didn't play enough. I think that they didn't find ways to get the ball in his hands. The way I looked at the Golden Tate trade was they had eight games with this guy, and they traded away a third-round pick for just eight games. So they didn't have time to bring him along slowly, and that's kind of what it looks like they're going to do. That doesn't make sense to me. With the urgency the way it is, you bring in a guy who has talent, who's supposed to make your offense more dynamic, and then you don't find ways to utilize him. It's almost like, why even make the trade if you're not going to figure out a way to use him? That's troubling to me, because that's all on the coaching, right? I mean, that's Doug Peterson. That's supposed to be his forte. You give him the weapons and he'll figure out a way to make it happen. And I didn't see that with Golden Tate. And time's running out. I mean, they don't have the luxury of time right now. They're falling behind in the division. The season's circling the drains. They got to figure out a way to get this guy involved, and they should have done it tonight.
On the bright side, he did not tear his Achilles, so there's that right after they trade for him. Dave, just before I let you go, about 60 seconds, this is a team that showed us character last year when Carson Wentz had his injuries, and there they were. They could have folded. They did not. They end up as Super Bowl champs. Are you sensing that there's still that same ability to face adversity and refusal to give up with this team?
No, I don't. I think the big difference from last year is they started the season with these injuries, and they never really got a chance to get going. Last year when they had those injuries, they were already rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about a team that was off to a really hot start before they started losing guys. This team never got rolling. This team is still stuck in neutral. And now these injuries are piling up. The losses are piling up. The schedule gets tougher. They're in New Orleans. They're at Los Angeles. They face the Texans. They face the Washington team for two games. It looks a lot better than we thought they were going to look. I just don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to get this thing figured out. And I think if you put some of those guys in the locker room on a lie detector test, they'd probably tell you the same thing.
Wowzers. Dave Zangaro, you can find him on Twitter at DZangaro NBCS. So it's Z-A-N-G-A-R-O. NBCS stands for NBC Sports in Philadelphia. We appreciate having you. We'd love to have you again. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
No problem. Have a good night.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.